Chapter 45. Amanda. Amanda walked into the diner first. Billy held the door open. She still had her fist round the little knife in her pocket. She had no clue who this man was, and until she was satisfied, she would be ready to plant this thing in his neck, public place or not. They found a booth by the window and sat across from each other. The diner was a piece of retro Americana. Easy, clean, red vinyl seats and high gloss tables with ribbed chrome etching, and a long counter with fixed tall stools spaced out around it. The kind of place tourists like and New Yorkers loathe. Billy carried a small laptop with him, which he put on the seat beside him. The waiter took an order for herbal tea for Billy, chamomile. Amanda ordered a glass of water and a cup of coffee. The place was lined with booths, and a local radio station played rockabilly over their heads. There were enough people around to make a low-volume conversation pretty much private as any conversation could be in the heart of Manhattan. The waiter brought Amanda's coffee and water for both of them. It took another minute before he returned with Billy's tea. In that time, they said nothing. Billy stared out of the window, keenly alert whenever he heard a siren. In this town, on Thanksgiving Eve, people were partying, which meant a lot more sirens than usual. He also took the time to look around the diner, giving every customer the once-over, making sure they were sufficiently far away, or at least otherwise engaged, so he could talk safely. Amanda poured sugar into her cup. She had given it up before Jess was born, but every now and again she needed a hit, especially when the coffee had been sitting in a bun flask long enough to grow a skin. She didn't want to be here. Her thoughts flitted to her car, still parked a few blocks from Quinn's house, and how she wished she'd parked closer.
Okay, you deserve some answers to your questions. I want to give you those answers because I need your help. I know we're both looking for the same woman. We have a common goal. If at the end of this conversation you want to walk away, that's fine. No hard feelings. Is that agreeable?
He asked. There was a commanding tone in his voice, but only now and then, like he was aware of it and so used it sparingly. Amanda nodded. She wanted to keep her tongue behind her teeth for now.
Good. I'll talk first. Then I need you to tell me what happened to you. I know some of it already, or I can guess, but you have specifics that might help me. Help us, I mean.
Amanda said nothing.
My wife was found dead in her office 2 years ago. Her name was Lucille, or Luce, that's what I called her. We'd been married 15 years. We'd been together for another 10 years before that, but she always said she could never marry a Marine. Didn't want to be one of those wives wondering if someday she was going to be handed a folded flag as they lowered my coffin into the dirt. We married the same year I retired. That's why I got out of the service, really. By that time, it didn't matter if I got a paycheck. Luce was always great with computers and money. She worked in investment capital groups all over the city, knew it all. I confess that most of that stuff went over my head, but it didn't matter. Luce earned good money of her own. Everything was great until one day she got a call from a guy about investing in an app. I didn't know what an app was, but she did. It was some kind of courier service for food. She left her job and went in with most of our savings. 6 months later, her partner, Jerry Gould, wanted to sell to one of the big tech firms. Luce said no. If they waited it out, they could make 10 times that number in another 12 months. I never liked Jerry. He had gambling problems, always broke. His behavior grew more erratic, and he got into debt with the wrong people, the kind of people who break your legs if you miss a payment. Luce told him she would help him with the money, but he needed to see a counselor and get his life together.
A cop car flew past the window with its siren blaring. Billy paused, took a sip of tea, and waited until the noise had died down, and the buzz of conversation started up again in the diner.
He took the money, and a week later asked for more. Luce said no. The next night, the cops found her body in the office. The place had been trashed. She was shot twice in the chest, twice in the head. They tried to tell me it was a professional burglary gone wrong. Can you believe that bullshit? It wasn't a professional burglary. It was a professional hit. Jerry sold the company for $6 million before Luce was even in the ground. He never came to see me to pay his respects, didn't go to the funeral, never shared a dime of that money with me, like he was supposed to. I was her surviving spouse and entitled to her shares. I didn't want it anyway. It was blood money. I knew it was him, but the cops said he had an alibi that held up, and there wasn't enough to charge him.
Billy paused, picked up his cup. "I'm sorry," said Amanda. His cup halted, inches from his lips as she spoke, as if those words had caught him off guard. It was the right thing to say, she was sure of it, but in the circumstances, perhaps he had not expected common courtesy.
"Thank you,"
he said, then cleared his throat and continued.
"I kind of went to pieces for a while. My doctor referred me to a psychiatrist who gave me pills, but I didn't take them. I've watched too many Marines go down that road and they never came back. Counseling looked like an option, group therapy. I tried it for a while. I found an online support group and that helped. Knowing that there are people who have been in your kind of situation and have come out the other side, well, it gives you some hope. Then I got talking to a new group member, Felicia. She joined a month after me. Her husband's killer had been acquitted on some kind of legal technicality, a faulty search warrant or something. She wanted the man who killed her husband dead on a slab and said she couldn't find peace until that day."
Amanda swallowed, tried not to show any reaction. She took a long drink of water. Her grip on the pocket knife began to relax.
"We talked online in a side chat privately, and we got to know each other. It felt like I was talking to someone who understood me. Someone going through the same kind of pain, with no resolution, no closure, no justice. After a month, she sent me a gift, a movie on DVD, Strangers on a Train. I'd never seen it. I watched it and she called me afterward. She told me we should do what those guys did in the movie, exchange murders. She would kill Jerry, and I would kill the man who'd murdered her husband."
He stopped talking and looked at Amanda. She felt as if he was staring right through her eyes, gazing all the way into the back of her skull. It wasn't uncomfortable. There was a kindness there, an easy, shared understanding of a wound they each had suffered.
"Felicia and I met the day after that phone call, and we talked, got to know each other, and we discussed how it could be done. Swapping the murders. A couple of days later, I got home from my regular Friday night bowling league, and she called me and said to turn on the TV. Jerry was missing, and there was an appeal on the local news. She said he wasn't missing. She had killed him. And now it was my turn."
His brow furrowed, and he took up his spoon and slowly stirred his tea, gazing into the dark liquid.
"She gave me the name and address of the man who killed her husband, said it had to be done that night before the cops found Jerry Gould's body and hauled me in as a suspect. I still had my old service weapon, so her plan was I knocked on the man's front door, put two in his head soon as he opened it."
Removing the spoon from the tea, he set it down on the table, wrapped both hands around the cup for warmth, and brought it to his lips, but he didn't drink. He just held it there, looked out the window, and said,
"I couldn't bring myself to knock on his door. I just stood outside his house, frozen."
"You didn't kill him?" asked Amanda. Shaking his head, Billy said,
"I've seen action in God knows how many countries. Pulling a trigger is not a big deal for me. In the military, it was different. It was combat. There was an enemy, and I had my orders. This felt all wrong. I just turned and left. I called Felicia to tell her I couldn't do it, but she didn't answer the phone. I went to her place, and it was cleaned out. All the internet articles about her and the trial of her husband's killer vanished the same day. I didn't know what to think at first. Maybe she was just cutting ties. But I knew it was more than that. Then, I saw a news report on Jerry Gould. He had been found alive after being locked in a janitor's closet in his building with no cell phone for 2 days. A cleaner found him Monday morning. He was dehydrated, but otherwise alive and healthy. She'd only pretended to kill Jerry to get me to kill someone for her.
Amanda said nothing. She didn't want to give anything away that could get her into trouble. This could all be a setup. Maybe this guy worked with Naomi. She was forcing herself to think like this, making sure she wasn't conned a second time. And while it was good to be skeptical, she knew, in her bones, that this man was telling the truth. "Did you go to the police?" she asked. He shook his head.
"I don't know much about criminal law, but I know if I went to the police and showed them our message history, the first thing they would do is arrest me for conspiracy to murder. It wouldn't matter to them if they never found Felicia. Last contact I had with Felicia was when she gave me the name and address of the man she wanted me to kill. That was a month ago. I've been going slowly crazy trying to find her."
"Did you find her?"
"Nope. Everything seemed to be a dead end. But I did know one thing. She wanted this man dead, and she had tried to con me into killing him. For whatever reason, this man was a target."
His voice trailed off, and his face softened as he looked at Amanda. She had a question she wanted to ask, but she was afraid of it. She already knew the answer, but it wasn't enough. It had to be said out loud. She had to face that fear and meet it head on, no matter what the cost. "What was the name of the man she told you to kill?" asked Amanda, her voice dry and cracked.
"Frank Quinn,"
said Billy softly.
"But you already knew that."
She nodded.
"I couldn't tell him, too risky. He'd call the cops on me and then I'd be toast. I did the next best thing. I watched his house. Then I got an alert on my email. I'd been searching for anything I could find on the web for Frank Quinn, so I set up an alert to tell me if anything about him was published. I clicked on the link in the alert, and I found new fake news articles on Quinn. But this time, he was accused of killing a girl named Rebecca Cotton. There were fake articles about that murder, and her mother, Naomi Cotton. I knew then that Felicia, or Naomi, as she was now probably calling herself, was trying to con someone else. I knew someone was going to come for Quinn. 2 nights ago, I was sitting in my car searching the internet on my laptop while I watched his house, and I found something," he said, lifting the laptop onto the table and opening it. He pressed a few keys, and Amanda saw the screen glare reflected in his glasses as he brought the thing to life. He pushed his fingers around the trackpad, typed, scrolled, then took hold of the laptop screen. "I'd been searching for her online. There's nothing about Felicia Silver, only the fake Naomi Cotton stuff. All the websites about Felicia and her husband's murder had disappeared. Everything she told me was a lie, apart from one thing."
"What was that?"
"She liked the movie Strangers on a Train. It's based on a book. I didn't know that either at the time. So I searched for fan pages, forums, news articles, anything that might give me a lead on Felicia. That's when I found this,"
he said, and turned the screen round. Amanda leaned forward and saw a news article from the New York Post. The headline read, "Killer Claims He Has a Copycat Accomplice." The piece was a year old. Today, a Manhattan court heard an extraordinary tale from Richard Kowalski, a 39-year-old librarian from Harlem who pleaded guilty to the murder of Saul Benson. Mr. Kowalski's attorney claimed that his client entered a murderous pact with a woman named Deborah Mallory, whom he met in an online support group. The victim, Mr. Benson, was unknown to the defendant prior to the murder. The defendant is claiming that he and Mallory copied the murder plot of the movie Strangers on a Train. Mallory would murder the defendant's boss, and the defendant in turn would kill Mr. Benson for Mallory. The district attorney has confirmed the police have no information on the whereabouts, nor evidence of the existence of a person named Deborah Mallory, matching the description provided by the defendant. And it is only the defendant who claims this woman exists at all. The hearing continues tomorrow. Amanda swallowed. She let go of the knife in her pocket and put both hands on the table.
The cops found Kowalski's DNA at the murder scene in the victim's apartment. When they caught him, they couldn't find any connection between Kowalski and the victim. They didn't work together, had no friends in common, didn't know each other, probably never met before the night of the attack. I think this was Felicia. I think she's done this before.
Jesus, said Amanda. What happened to Kowalski?
They never found Deborah Mallory, and Kowalski is dead. Lasted a month in Sing Sing before somebody put a shank in his lung.
Amanda leaned forward to reach for her glass, but her hands were shaking too much. She put them in her lap, tried to focus. She could have the exact same fate as Kowalski if she didn't find Naomi. She knew that much, but she wasn't completely convinced Naomi, Felicia, and Deborah Mallory were all the same person. How do you know that's Felicia? She asked.
It would be one hell of a coincidence if two women were going around the city under false names, meeting men and women in online support groups and persuading them to swap murders.
Billy made sense. He made a lot of sense in a situation that was way too fucked up to begin with.
I was waiting for another poor idiot to show up and try to take out Quinn. I wasn't expecting a woman, no offense. When I saw you there that night, I thought you might be Felicia. You're the same height, same build, and you were all covered up in that hood. That's why I tailed you, he said.
Amanda shook off the thought. She had bigger concerns. If it is her, then what the hell is she doing? She's just killing people randomly? She asked.
I don't know. Far as I can tell, there's no connection between Quinn and Benson, the man Kowalski killed. I've had a private investigator helping me with some pieces of this puzzle. He doesn't know the whole story, just for my own protection, you understand. He helps out with access to databases, credit card information, deep background, that kind of stuff. The victims were not friends, not as far as we can tell. Quinn is kind of a mystery. He runs a lot of companies. Every one of them seems to fail, but none of them are connected to the other victim.
Amanda thought of the rolls of cash from Quinn's lockbox, now safely in her backpack. What do you want from me? Asked Amanda.
I need you to tell me all about the woman you're looking for. That's why you went back to the house, right? To find out who Quinn really was and hope that it led you to her? That's a smart move. That's the logical move, the one I would have made. You want to know what the connection is between Quinn and the woman who told you to kill him. I'm not a detective, and I can't tell the private investigator the whole story because he would report me to the cops. I could have been you. I could have pulled the trigger on Quinn. We've both been conned, but we can help each other. Tell me everything you know about her, and maybe we can find her together.
What Billy had told her felt like the truth. No one else could know those details unless they'd been one of Naomi's victims. And yet, she'd just met this man. As kindly and as sad as he seemed, she didn't quite trust him yet. Maybe that was fair, or maybe it was because she'd just been betrayed. Why should I trust you? Asked Amanda.
Because I didn't have to grab you off the street. I could have left you for the cops. And you know I'm telling the truth. You and I have been through the same mill with this woman. She used your grief and your pain and made you do something terrible. That could have been me. I won't tell the cops what you did, I promise. This isn't the first time she's manipulated someone into murder, and I think she'll do it again. It has to stop.
I couldn't do it, said Amanda. I backed out at the last second, but I'd hurt my knee and couldn't get away fast enough. Quinn attacked me and I defended myself. Billy nodded, said,
I believe you. but you should never have been put in that situation. Help me stop her.
Amanda drank some coffee, looked around and saw a sign on the counter that said, "We never close." She held out her hand across the table.
"My name is Amanda White."
He took it gracefully.
"Nice to meet you."
She scooched over, close to the window, said,
"Come on over here so we can look at the screen together. I'll help you, but if we find her, then I need to talk to her."
"Of course."
"What are you going to do if we find her?"
"I don't know, exactly. She needs help. We have to find her before she persuades someone else to commit a murder. After that, we'll figure it out. That good enough?"
"For now, yeah. Show me everything you have on the other murder," said Amanda, taking off her jacket. "And you're buying the coffee."